And welcome. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse. And as always, we're wishing you the best. We love to say hello to you right here on Progressive Radio Network. And of course, many of you do join us live. We get lots of emails and phone calls. And we actually have call-in listen lines where you can call in when the show is live. And you also have archives of this show. So if there's something that you like that you hear, you can always listen to the archives. And of course, we meet with so many of our listeners online, where we have lots of classes. We have one starting tonight, which is through the American Herbalist Guild, about the scientific significance and support of botanical remedies. And that's a 3-week course starting tonight through the American Herbalist Guild. We have lots of free classes. We did one last week on eye health that was free to professionals. And if you go to naturalnurse.com and click on calendar, you will see a list of our many classes and workshops, both on ground and online. We've given several workshops where we go outside and gather wild edible plants, things that some people call weeds. Weed just means a plant that you don't know what to do with it in terms of food and medicine. That's a weed, because every one of those weeds usually do have some kind of use, but of course you need to know what. So we actually went out with a group of physicians and gathered edible and medicinal plants, and they made their own medicine. They were pretty amazed about that. And that brings us to our guest today, Dr. Kenneth Fine. Kenny is a board-certified physician, as well as being an accomplished musician and creator of oro-intestinal fitness products. Dr. Fine is a gastroenterologist who has held staff positions at Baylor University Medical Center and the University of Texas. His medical research has appeared in prestigious medical journals, including the New England Journal of Medicine, Gastroenterology, the Journal of Clinical Investigation, and the American Journal of Gastroenterology. He has been professionally involved in patient care, medical research, teaching, directing clinical laboratories, nutritional pioneering and original health products, and unique organic health food development for almost 30 years. On today's show, Dr. Fine will discuss the 6 tenets of finer health, including the connection to music and healing. And you can find more at several websites. We'll give one, which is finerhealth.com. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. So are you there, Dr. Fine?
I'm here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you sound good. You sound loud and clear. So right. You have an amazing bio. I looked around on your website beforehand, and I'm so interested in the fact, and we will talk about music also, but I am really interested in the fact that you have written so many papers in gastroenterology, because we have written many books. One is called Arthritis, the Alternative Medicine Definitive Guide, and every single thing in that book is evidence-based. And it seems to me that in mainstream journals, such as the American Journal of Gastroenterology, the Journal of Clinical Investigation, there is so much information that is evidence-based in terms of something like the relationship between the integrity of the gastrointestinal tract, sometimes called leaky gut, to inflammation. And yet, this entire body of knowledge seems to be ignored by mainstream gastroenterologists. What is your statement about that, Dr. Fine?
Well, I am the most qualified doctor to speak about this because I've had arthritis since I was age 14. And my approach to this is what I call, or what Hippocrates called in 600 BC, let food be thy medicine. So I am an entirely diet-treated arthritic. I have the kind of arthritis that not only affects the entire spine and sacroiliac joint, but also affects the intestine. So that's even called enteropathic arthritis, or intestinal disease arthritis. And it's my, you know, and being the doctor that discovered how to diagnose gluten sensitivity and how important food sensitivity really is, it's become my opinion that the reason food does not get any respect in either gastroenterologic circles or medical circles is because it's not scientific enough. And if it goes back to 600 BC and science today is such advanced technology and writing prescriptions and scientific knowledge, it, I think it kind of belittles the possibility that the doctors can do something that you cannot do alone. So that's kind of been the secret of my most recent success, and that would be over the last 18 years when I made the shift from traditional academic medicine into the realm of teaching the public. And so I think the last part of that is, if gluten is really the problem that I know it is, and many people think it is, well, doctors eat gluten too, and they don't want to give up their pizza and their bread any more than the next person.
Well, that's an interesting explanation, but I would say that just like you discussed earlier, the link is so clear from an evidence-based perspective. I think who loses out is not so much the physician in terms of sharing that information, which is true and evidence-based and fully supported in mainstream medical literature, such as papers you've presented, but it certainly would cut down on pharmaceutical drug sales.
Right. Well, I mean, I am a doctor, and so I'm kind of an insider to the whole idea that the pharmaceutical companies control our industry. They do that at a business level, but I don't really think they're doing that at kind of a day-to-day ideology level. So I think it's influencing ideology, but in the end, doctors are free to think and do as they please. And I really think that we are too in love with new technologic science, and we've left all of the old wisdom behind. And truthfully, I would say that the thing that distinguishes more holistic-minded or acting doctors from the most traditional is that they are more wise rather than just intelligent, and probably more spiritual, too, you could say.
Well, I love your explanation, and I'm actually doing a series on the scientific validation of botanical medicine, which I lecture on all the time. And today I'm going to focus on some of the ancient theories, because it seems like this, the validation actually changes depending on what point of time you're in. So there's really no reason to think we're at the end point. I always find that funny with astrology as well, where people go, oh, now we have found the end of the universe. No, you've just gone right. The next technological step where you can see deeper into the universe. So the same with medicine. If we look at the teachings of Maimonides and Hildegard of Bingen, who was a nun, and Maimonides was a rabbi, you know, so very different traditions, or even traditional healers in indigenous areas around the world, they all look at the spirit and food. And then they also bring in things like the four humors, like perhaps we ignore that now, even though they still influence us, the weather and temperature. So it's amazing how diverse situations, such as a rabbi Maimonides and a nun Hildegard, actually are talking about food and spirituality and their link to health and wellness.
Well, that's two of my six tenets that we're talking about of the finer health revolution. So, and by the way, well, I say that there's nothing new under the sun, and I'm not inventing anything new. I'm just kind of bringing what has been universally and important for the ages back to the forefront.
And aren't you excited, Dr. Ken? You know, I looked through your website, finerhealth.com. You're free to give other ones to our audience, but they're really beautifully done, very simple to navigate, and you yourself look fantastic. And I know that doesn't happen, you're not 25 years old, without you yourself walking your talk.
Well, I thank you for that compliment. And, you know, I don't think about that too often. Of course, I'm just looking in the mirror day to day. But every now and then, I live in a rural area, kind of like a ranch setting, so I do a lot of chores. And, you know, the thing that I think that I derive my power, if you will, from, and I call it spiritual power, is from nature and from being connected to the source of that. And, of course, I call it spiritual power. Oriental medicine calls it chi. You know, it's called life force in the kinesiologic paradigm. You know, we've got, and that's why I believe, by the way, in my finer health tenets, which I'll just say real quickly, are proper diet, adequate sleep, being happy and laughing, being loving and living lovingly, being creative, and then finding a way to be, to express your spiritual health. I think all of these things are not only health-giving, but longevity-giving as well. And I happen to be the serendipitous or synchronistic recipient of a, you know, fountain of youth modality through hot springs and sulfur spring healing water that I happen to have lived in now for about 15 years.
Oh, I do definitely think that makes a big difference. I also travel the globe really seeking out various hot springs. There's a really good one right in Florida in a town called Venice, and it's a very obscure one, and it's interesting because it's only $12 to go in there. It's been there, of course, since Native American times, in fact, forever, and it's so healing when you soak in there. And it's interesting, Dr. Fine, that who rents all the houses around it and stay for the whole winter? There are no Americans. It's all European people.
Well, that's an interesting and true observation. And interestingly, I'm about to expand my gluten sensitivity testing lab to Europe and some of these new oro-intestinal fitness products. And I definitely plan to expand my interest in, it's called balneotherapy scientifically, the study of the beneficial effects of healing water. But I've noticed that when I've been in Europe myself. And I do the same thing. Wherever I go, I'm trying to find the healing water.
So let's go back in time. And with your very, very interesting path, because what was sent to me is the fact that one thing that's very important to you is your beingness, besides being a doctor, as a musician.
Yes. So my favorite way that I expressed this was the original way when I first brought the music to the highest forefront of my health profession. And suddenly the idea came to me as calling myself a physician musician on a mission. And I'll tell you the truth, at that time, you know, I'm a songwriter, I'm a lyricist, and I'm a rhyming poet. And so it sounded very catchy, and it rhymed, but I don't think I knew what the mission was back then. I just knew what I was and found out later, you know, what that meant. But the way I expressed it graphically in a PR piece or a promotional piece was the timeline of a physician musician on a mission. And I'm a precocious medical professional and scientist, so I went into medical school out of high school. Actually, I was 17 years old, graduated 6 years later as a 23-year-old, and so almost immediately out of high school, my medical success and career and path kind of took off. So that curve of this timeline just kind of went from like graduating high school right up to this, you know, high professionally achieved place. But it was the same time I began to pursue wanting to be a singer. Now, I had been a boyhood violin player and you know, instrumentalist in school, and that was out of my pursuit for music. But this was the way that, you know, God has taught me or led me to express my musical presence. And I found out later now, you know, all these years later, how the voice of the physician is where the love and compassion comes to heal. And so I call it the healing voice of Kenny Davenbein. But the interesting thing about the musical pursuit is that the first entry of that timeline was failed audition for a high school talent show. And then quickly followed by failed audition for a medical school talent show. And yet, you know, my father was kind of a metaphysical thinker, and he was I'd say, you know, into alternative ideologies, you know, for the time in the 70s, meditation and such. And he always said, you know, if you first don't succeed, try again. And so it's not within my fabric to just give up on anything. And so, you know, I kept with my pursuit of wanting to be a guitar player and a singer, but that only happened after medical school. And the way that it actually expressed itself, amazingly, is as a synagogue cantor, which is the melodic chanter in Hebrew for a Hebrew service in a synagogue. And I happen to have had relatives, three that I know of, and then there was one in the old country that I didn't know. But, you know, that's how, that was the doorway that I was led through to bring my singing voice to the world. And it was shortly after that, almost immediately after that, that spontaneously writing songs began in my life.
And that's one of the wonderful things, you know, it's a double-edged sword like most things, but our whole internet life now, because people can go on finerhealth.com and you have so many songs right there on YouTube that people can listen to, you know, free and instantly and really get a sense of what's going on with you. So you have so many interesting little things there, and especially where you're talking about the testing laboratories, because that's something very unique. How did you develop those, and how could people access some of those tests to find out? What kind of readout do you get, or do you need to go through a physician?
Well, actually, the breakthrough that I created in the diagnostic testing realm was two things: that you do not need a doctor to get our services, and that is at enterolab.com. Entero means intestinal, so this is an intestinal lab, enterolab.com. And I developed the methodology, first of all, the paradigm or mental and experimental framework throughout the 90s to figure out that a disease that my mentor had happened to discover, it was called microscopic colitis. It was a form of inflammation of the colon that caused primarily diarrheal disease, but we didn't know what caused it. And the strange thing was that it seemed to be epidemiologically, genetically, and pathologically related to a disease we knew that was caused by gluten called celiac disease. But this was in the colon, where celiac disease affects the small intestine. And so through a series of, you know, over about 10 years and primarily over 3 to 4 years and some research studies of which are published in my CD and you can find online, I was able to realize that the reason why blood tests for gluten sensitivity were not finding the gluten-related problem in most people, and it turns out 99% of people who react to gluten do not have celiac disease. The reason why that is because they didn't have damage to their small intestine, which seems to be required to get these positive blood tests, which means, really, therefore, or you can deduce that the intestinal damage is the required fact, and that means that these antibodies must be leaking across the intestinal milieu into the blood through a damaged lining. And so perhaps looking inside the intestine where all the intestinal immunology and inflammatory reactions occur first, that would be the key. And so it was the invention, the patented, now patented in ideology, that you need to test stool, not blood or skin, for food sensitivities. And lo and behold, it showed in this form of colitis, about 80% reactivity versus only, say, 9% or 10% in the blood. And that has been the benefit of this testing, not only that it's more sensitive and finds the problem, but that I was brave enough, almost really, you know, I don't want to say naivete. It was just the internet was kind of new. I didn't know if it was really legal or not, and I just said, you know what, it probably doesn't, laws don't exist, and I'm just going to put it out on the internet, on a website, and why should people have to travel to Dallas with diarrhea and with intestinal symptoms, sometimes, you know, with accidents and such? Let's send the specimen from your home, send it to our lab, and you can order that online, and then we'll give you the results, which at this point today is primarily an extensive food sensitivity panel, malabsorption testing, inflammation testing, testing of the pancreas and parasites, and pretty much anything you can do for the stool.
So in terms of, let's say, the food sensitivity, are you looking for IgG-related, such as something that might be a three-day delayed reaction versus something more immediate?
No. So IgG is the antibody class primarily in the blood. It does not exist in the intestinal tract because the antibodies that occur on what we call mucosal surfaces, that would be the respiratory tract, conjunctiva, intestinal tract, and a woman's vagina, those are called IgA, and they are called secretory IgA. So that was the big breakthrough, that you had to measure the IgA, and we did this at the beginning. Frankly, I learned that IgG wasn't present in the intestine by default, because when we tested for IgG, the results were always zero. When we tested for IgA, the results were, you know, most often positive. And so it's not necessary, and it's really not an immediate reaction. So that's IgE, which can also be found in the intestinal tract. But those are immediate hypersensitivity reactions, the kind that cause an immediate, you know, welt or hives, swelling of your lips and throat, possibly a respiratory compromise in the full anaphylaxis or anaphylaxis type reactions. Those are all mediated by like when you get, if you're allergic to bees and you get stung by a bee, that's going to be an IgE-mediated reaction, whereas these IgA in the intestine are more of a chronic inflammatory response.
So now in terms of, that's really fascinating, and I love that you're sharing that with us. We're going to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and when we come back, we're going to continue our discussion with Dr. Kenneth Fine, who is a board-certified physician, as well as an accomplished musician and creator of the Orointestinal Fitness products, and he's describing now to us a very revolutionary kind of laboratory test he's able to do to help people figure out what is it that is triggering a response or an inflammatory response in their particular situation. We will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss jojoba, the miracle plant of the desert.
Jojoba is spelled J-O-J-O-B-A, but is pronounced according to its Spanish origins. The jojoba plant grows in the American Southwest and the Sonoran Desert in Mexico. The jojoba is a large bush-like plant resembling mistletoe. It can reach a height of 15 feet and can live from 100 to 200 years. The Sonoran Indians have used the oil pressed from the jojoba beans for centuries. Father Juniper Serra, founder of 21 missions in California, noted in the early 1700s that the local Indians were using jojoba oil for treating sores, cuts, bruises, burns, and as a diet supplement, to soothe skin from sun and wind burns, as a cooking oil, and even as a beverage.
The importance of jojoba as a cash crop was proclaimed in 1935. But it was not until 1974, when the killing of sperm whales was banned, that the government began to study jojoba oil in depth as a substitute for whale oil. The National Academy of Sciences concluded, jojoba oil has a radically different chemical structure than any other known oil. Most oils break down or turn rancid. Jojoba, on the other hand, is hypoallergenic, non-toxic, never turns rancid, and does not break down even under high temperature and pressure.
The University of California at Riverside did a study where they cooked 27 batches of popcorn in the same heated jojoba oil. The last batch was just as perfect as the first. These unusual properties are unique to jojoba oil because, chemically speaking, jojoba oil is not really an oil at all, but is a liquid wax. Its composition is almost identical to sebum, which is the oil secreted by human sebaceous glands to help to protect the skin from the environment.
Jojoba has a myriad of usages. The cosmetic industry takes advantage of its compatibility to human skin by adding it to shampoos, conditioners, moisturizers, and many other cosmetic products. In medicine, jojoba can be used directly on rashes, cuts, and psoriasis. It may also be used as a lubricant for artificial hearts. Jojoba contains a natural appetite suppressant, which can be used in weight loss products. It has no known side effects. In industry, jojoba is known to be a superior engine lubricant and will cause a car to run 20 to 30 degrees cooler when added to the crankcase oil.
So, if you are interested in a miracle plant from the desert, reach for jojoba in your natural medicine chest.
Welcome back once again to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We love to hear from you. You can find us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. We interact with many of our listeners almost every day because we give lots and lots of lectures and workshops. Some are on ground where you come in person. That's a whole new word, on ground, right? And we do stuff together such as take an herb walk, gather edible and medicinal plants, learn to make your own medicines such as tinctures and extracts and poultices and all the traditional medicine that has been used by your ancestors, regardless of where you're from, for thousands of years. We also do a lot of things with mind-body medicine, learning to relax and learning to use your mind to calm your emotions, which is really so helpful in bringing down inflammation. And one of the ways we do that is through looking at things that might stimulate us through food allergies, which our guest, Dr. Ken Fine, is an expert at. And another thing that he's an expert at is using music and sound for healing, which is actually an ancient tradition in all healing modalities as well. So we're so happy to have as our guest today Dr. Ken Fine. You can find him at finerhealth.com, and he's a board certified physician, accomplished musician, and creator of the Oro-Intestinal Fitness products. So thank you so much for being with us today, Dr. Fine.
Thank you for having me.
Now, you were really going into a great explanation of this test that you have. Now, are you the only one doing this particular modality in terms of finding sensitivities through stool analysis?
Yes, primarily because it's patented, but there is quite a bit of know-how in a laboratory dealing with stool, and not all labs, not only do they not know how, but a lot of them don't even want to deal with it. They find it kind of icky, which I think is ironic because there's nothing in stool that can really kill a person in a lab, whereas blood and other fluids have very deadly viruses and other microorganisms. So it's almost the smell itself that seems to keep them away.
Well, I mean, there's actually quite a number of, there's even one being promoted on television more recently for colon cancer,
right?
Which they also have as a kit that they send to people's house. And, of course, it's a stool analysis, as we have used for so many years in various screenings. So you're correct. It's not something that's that unusual in terms of laboratory analysis, but the way you're doing it is unique. And if people get a report, if they go to finerhealth.com, could they see what a report might look like? Like, what kinds of information would you get back?
You know, actually, you'd have to go to finerhealth.com and then navigate over to enterolab.com. That's the actual laboratory's website.
Okay.
To tell you the truth, I don't know if we have a sample. We have that upon request. I don't think it's on the actual website, but certainly everything about the testing, about how it was developed, and everything that we offer is certainly there to be seen.
So when you do this, do you find that everyone has some kind of gluten sensitivity through this test, or is there a percentage of people that do?
So the difference in the percentages would depend on the population that you're looking at. So when we were doing research looking at both, say, healthy volunteers, people who would never seek out a test for some symptom, then you would find that the overall positivity might be, say, 50 to 60%, which is still an amazingly high percentage of people. And it's increasing. So it used to be like 45%. Now, over the last 18 to 20 years since I've been doing this, the epidemic is spreading and getting worse. But when people actually have, say, irritable bowel syndrome or colitis or arthritis or any autoimmune or rheumatologic problem, those percentages can be as high as 90+% because, again, In this case, the food sensitivity you mentioned, the gut, so that means that your permeability to the foods in your gut are crossing into the intestinal tissue and then possibly into the blood. We can find a lot of cross sensitivities as well. And let me just, I've been wanting to say this since we started the show and you mentioned about the evidence base of systemic inflammation occurring as a consequence of gut inflammation. Not only are those age-old, like Ayurvedic and possibly Oriental medical concepts, in autoimmune diseases that are widespread throughout the body, almost always they find sores or ulcers or detectable inflammation in the gut. And while that's been noteworthy in books and book chapters and such for, say, reading about, you know, any autoimmune rheumatic disease, there was just not much mentioned about it, almost like it was just a curiosity, when in fact the leading paradigm in my paradigm would be that that's the actual portal of the inflammation, because everything that we eat is a foreign body, really, to our body. And so if we are immune stimulated, which for the most part we all are now, and that's part of the epidemic, that we now have too much hormonal and pollutant and electronic stimulation and stress to our immune system. And so now we start reacting to things that we otherwise shouldn't. And, of course, we expose ourselves to more foreign substances through the intestinal tract than any other place provides.
Yes, that is very, very wise information. So some of the interesting things that you said, Dr. Ken Fine, is you, as a trained gastroenterologist, and I know this through patient interactions that I've been involved with for the last 35 years. I've been doing this actually since 1964, that very often their gastroenterologist will not discuss inflammation, they have to go to their rheumatologist, and their rheumatologist will not discuss gastroenterology issues other than giving them a drug, because the nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs they gave them for the inflammation is further exacerbating their gastro issues. So there's like no communication, but you are talking about two together, which is really more the reality of the case.
Yes. And you know what's kind of amazing again, this kind of the pieces of the puzzle came together over time. Not only myself, I actually was the first in my family to express these rheumatologic problems in my generation, I mean. But this is a these are always multi-generational problems. They weed and test for the genes in my lab, the HLA genes, the immune system genes that are related to these problems. But my grandmother happened to have had rheumatoid arthritis in the day where there was no medicine, and so it was send them to the hot springs, move to Arizona, and you know, all of those ideas, which only helped temporarily because I'm not dealing with the diet. But in my family, I have been the most strict and disciplined about using the food as medicine, and I am essentially in perfect rheumatologic health, whereas my siblings, unfortunately, can't claim as much success, and they're on, you know, the sophisticated anti-inflammatory and, you know, what they call the biologics. And so it's interesting to see me that my family itself and really my own history is kind of like a family study, and it really is reinforcing. Now, by the way, I will say sometimes it takes only one indiscretion, eat the wrong thing, not realize you're sensitive to pickles, and bam, you know, it's mostly a flare. It starts today in my gut, not in my joints, whereas when I was younger, it would be the joints that would tell me, oh, there's a problem, or my sinuses for that matter. And I call that, you know, learning the vocabulary of your food sensitivity language, that we all have. It could be rashes, it could be headaches, it could be fibromyalgia, it could be intestinal symptoms like irritable bowel syndrome, or it could be, you know, joint, what we call arthralgias, or even outright arthritis. And it could be mood and other things, too, by the way, emotional effects on the brain or glandular problems.
And that is so indicative both of the newest information in science, but also the oldest information. One of my teachers was Dr. Bernard Jensen. And in fact, we used to meet many times at another hot springs, which you might be familiar with, which is in Arizona, outside of Safford, Arizona. It's the Eden Hot Springs. Absolutely excellent. One of my favorite places, because I lived in Bisbee, Arizona. I had an off-the-grid farm there for years where my children, who are in their mid-40s now, were born. And he also, as many of the older healers, really reflected on something that you're really sharing with, which is everything about your health starts in the gut. And all of those things are very, very much interrelated. And you're not going to drug that out of existence. But like you just shared, if you get in tune with your triggers, you're able to avoid them. Or some people go, you know what, I'm going to this wedding tomorrow, I'm going to eat whatever I want, and then I actually planned a slow day for Monday and Tuesday because I'm going to know I'm going to have to recover.
Yeah. Well, I always say, as others do, pain is the great motivator, and there is not an hour of pain that I've ever had that I wished I had. So, and by the way, I think pain is a teacher, too, and it's taught me a lot about how to be a better doctor. You know, I got my back problem came at a young age, and it was actually congenital. So I was born with an inadequately closed vertebra at the bottom of my spine. But then that was the vulnerable place, and I got injured as a young athlete. And then that's when the arthritis, and, you know, because I already had, say, chronic gluten and other food sensitivity issues causing headaches, sinus problems. Well, they told me I'd have to live with this problem, and there was nothing that it could be done. So by the time I was 30, I was crippled. I was working out of a bed. I couldn't get out of pain. And, you know, and by the way, the non-steroidals that I was using did so much damage to my esophagus and stomach that, you know, I even had to learn that hard lesson, that those weren't options. But what I realized was that, you know, empathy and compassion is really the most important attribute of a doctor. And it made me more compassionate and empathetic to patients suffering. And so I actually think it was kind of part of my plan, and the fact that over time that I've gotten ever more of the problems that I treat on the one hand, I think is spiritual serendipity. But, you know, I heard a little bit of the show before this one, and actually I believe that I think about and talk about these issues so much that I think to some extent they're manifesting in me, for better or for worse.
Well, it sounds like it's for better, and it sounds like it leads to a lot of help for others, which is absolutely wonderful. And people can find out more at finerhealth.com if they're interested in that test. I'm just wondering if people in New York can use that test, because I know people in New York have a lot of problems. Even with hair analysis, they're not allowed to actually mail hair through the mail from New York to the various laboratories.
That's true. Your state thinks that you all aren't smart enough and mature enough to make your own decisions, I'm sorry to say. So
that's true for your test, too, yeah.
Well, you know, I actually don't think it would stand up in court. I don't know why I would be required to abide by a New York law, being a businessman and a doctor in Texas, but we actually abide by it. We're not looking for trouble from the Health Board of New York.
Right. So what people have done, and they really have done this, they've visited their naturopathic physician. And, of course, naturopathic medicine is not legal in New York either, but it is legal in Connecticut. And then they mail things from there, where it's totally fine.
Okay. That could be.
Yeah, there's sort of ways around everything.
New Jersey's pretty close to New York, too.
That's true. But it just seems so absolutely ridiculous. But nonetheless, so from New York, you could not mail that test, but you can find other ways to have it delivered to your laboratory. So we're going to take another short break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And when we come back, Dr. Kenny Fine, we must investigate your music, who you are, and your healing message. So we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse.
This is Karen Hartglass, host of It's All About Food, and you're listening to PRN, your source for progressive, up-to-date, and inspirational information on nutrition and health.
Hey folks, my name is Jordan Valerie, my pronouns are she, her, hers, and I'm here to tell you about the Millennial Politics Podcast. We speak with the next generation of progressive candidates, activists, and organizations dedicated to restoring our democracy and protecting our civil rights and liberties. Make sure to stay tuned for Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on the Progressive Radio Network, to hear the most recent episode of our podcast, and follow us on social media and iTunes to stay up to date with everything Millennial Politics.
Get your daily dose of happy each morning at 9 a.m. Eastern Time on PRN. LOA Today is expanding to appear on PRN now 5 mornings per week, Monday through Friday. I'm Walt Thiessen, the host of LOA Today. The way you start your day sets the tone for the rest of the day, so start it happy. We explore the realm of positive psychology, the law of attraction, and the power of positive thinking, and we have a heck of a lot of fun in the process. You'll find yourself smiling each morning. That's LOA Today, weekday mornings at 9 a.m. Eastern Time here on PRN.
PRN.FM, your station for progressive viewpoints on politics, economics, health, the environment, and a whole lot more. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Once again, right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We love to hear from you. Get in touch at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. You're fine. You can listen to him playing music, which we're about to talk about, or find out about his six tenets of health. of very, very wise information that we have found out during the show. He's used for himself as well as patients throughout the years, and that is a good place to start. Or, Dr. Fine, welcome back. Is there a different website you would like to share?
Well, I think Finer Health is my main portal. If you're interested in music directly, you can go to kennyfine.com.
Yeah, I found my way there as well. And let's talk about the music now, because that's not just a little part, that's a big part of who you consider yourself to be as a physician, musician on a mission. What is the mission?
Well, I've always stated in my health realm that my mission is for your health, happiness, hope, which says that I'm not just going to get just healthy, that you need to be happy too. You cannot be healthy if you're not happy, and you can't be happy if you're not healthy. But the hope, you know, the spiritual side is also important. And so on the one hand, it's to say that there's a three-tiered actual program that we do, i.e. physician, musician, and on a mission. But in the last, I'd say, 5 years, I've decided that I couldn't just be idle in my intention with the world as it is. And, of course, the world's always been as it is with, you know, bad things happening. But I decided to inspire and create goodness for goodness sake would become my mission. So that's the mission part of this.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And how do you start? If you're going to write a song, does it just come to you naturally, or do you think about what you'd like to present?
Well, the best ones actually do come sometimes almost fully written as a download. I am one of those wise type, you know, maybe a more enlightened type artist that realize that I'm just a vehicle or a creative process coming through me. But I will say that I have been, you know, ever since I started writing research papers as a doctor, I have been a writer, and I liked it, and I found the creativity stimulating. In fact, when I started my own nonprofit research institute, which is called the Intestinal Health Institute, it was that I wanted to be a reader, a medical writer and a researcher, but that carried over, I believe, into my interest to become a songwriter and a musician. And the truth is, I think I'm like a flower, or we all are. You know, a flower doesn't have to think about what kind of petals to put out, what kind of color to express, what kind of flower to be. That's in your genetic code. And I believe that it is just within my genetic code and in my destiny, if you will, that this is all supposed to happen. And so the thing that I'll take the most credit for, or at least being the, you know, lucky recipient of, is to just know, just flow with the person you're supposed to be and the purpose that you're supposed to have. And we grow into that. You know, we don't know that at age 10 or age 20, but, you know, we grow into that. And then finally you realize, you know what? If I'm supposed to be a physician and a musician, just be it. Just be courageous. Don't act, you know, older than your age. Act younger than your age. You know, sometimes even being childlike is the best way to be, because we're uninhibited in truth and in spiritual truth. And so I would say, for the most part, that the musical expression is just something that I'm allowing. And frankly, it does take a transformative process, maybe you might even call it a spiritual transformation, that gives us the courage, gave me the courage, to be who I wanted to be, who I really was, without worrying about what other professionals or patients would think. And then in the end, when you do good with it, then who doesn't want, you know, who's not good with goodness?
Well, that's really interesting information. I like what you said about act younger than you are. That might be one of the secrets too. You know, my parents, I want to send them a shout out. God bless them. You know, they're in their 90s. They're running around, dancing and walking and swimming and driving. And they have a little get together every single night at their house where, by the way, they drink alcohol. I don't, but they use vodka. Something about that must be a great preservative. And you're not allowed to come to their house and talk about your illnesses. You have to come prepared with a dirty joke and to have, you know, a fun social time. That's their rule. So that's pretty interesting what you just said about that. And all their friends tend to be younger because, unfortunately, one of the things they have dealt with but they rebound from is, of course, the loss of lots of their friends over the years.
You know, my father, who came from a family of short age, you know, father dying at 60, brother 64, and he lived to 87, almost 88, and he was really into, like I said, you know, positive thinking and metaphysics and meditation, and he got into supplements, you know, which I'm not that big on, to be honest. I do have my own line of oro-intestinal fitness products, which is a great new invention, but nevertheless, you know, I watched him have to, outliving your peers does look like something that can be depressing if you allow it, and he played tennis into his 70s and such, but by all means, I would say be yourself, be creative. That's one of the tenets. Laugh, be happy. Definitely, I'd say if there was one thing, one tenet, if you will, to remember is don't be influenced by what other people say or think about you if you're being your pure self, your true self is what I call it.
And that's probably one of the tenets that you talk about in terms of happiness. You know, that is so interesting because I don't think too many doctors will give happy, do what makes you happy as a prescription, but it is so important.
Well, I've called it prescribing laughter for a long time, literally, and I've had to use that myself. In fact, Norman Cousins, the writer who had this book called Anatomy of an Illness, he, believe it or not, he had the same illness that I have. My, you know, it's called spondyloarthropathy. He had the formal name called ankylosing spondylitis. I don't literally have that just because I don't have the genetic marker. But he healed that through laughter and through positive thinking, and he would not accept the morose setting of a hospital, so he checked himself out, and he would not accept the negative prognosis that he was given. And he also happened to relate the onset of this problem in his middle age to a toxic insult when he was in Russia. Like, you know, they have a lot of pollution, like a lot of countries, worse than the U.S., actually. But, you know, laughter does help the immune system. It does help our physiology. And, in fact, all of the studies that are now coming around to show the benefits of music, they really echo the same things that have been seen in studies, say, of love or of prayer or of laughter or of animal companions. These are things that uplift our life force, that uplift our spirit. And so I always say you have to heal from the spirit out. And that's, you know, the things that lift your spirit, those are the things that give you health and longevity.
Well, thank you so much for all that wise sharing information right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, Dr. Fine. So as we go out, what would be your shout-outs to our audience in terms of a place to start to get to know you, maybe investigate your music, and anything else you'd like to share?
Well, I think Finer Health is really the main website to find. You can find the new products there. These new products are kind of revolutionary because they link the importance of not just intestinal health, but you have to address your oral health, which is the opening of the gastrointestinal tract. And you have to approach these things like fitness. You can't just get in shape in one. You can't run a marathon tomorrow. You have to train for it. So giving yourself patience and time. Finerhealth.com, certainly if you go to YouTube, to Kenny Davin Fine, that's my musical name, or KennyDavinFine.com, you can find the music there. And, you know, I think the most important thing, you know, the parting message is to be purposeful in your life, to be loving, and to engage the spiritual purpose and the spiritual power that is within us. And those are the three things that I actually say are the way to live a successful life, which is love, purpose, and spirit.
Well, thank you so much for that inspiring talk. And our listeners can find you at finerhealth.com and from there investigate the various tenets that you describe. You have beautiful little videos about each of them. You have your songs listed there and some YouTubes where you're actually playing them, as well as lots of CDs. You've been incredibly creative, and especially with somebody who had your own health challenge and overcame it. So you are walking your talk as well as sharing this information with others. So until next time, thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Ken Fine.
Thank you very much.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in once again to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We'd love to hear from you. Get in touch at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, hoping that you stay healthy.